My name is John O'Neill. I work for HOS Networks, 20 Mumble employees. I am the chief data scientist, which means that we have two data scientists. And I'm here to talk about some, based on some work that we did internally to try to find unusual events in networks, scratch off the serial numbers, and we'll look to see how it's useful for other people. So the biggest problem is that networks are complex systems. I mean, usually it's hard enough to know the typical things going on in the networks. But what we really want to know is what the unusual things are. But how do we find them? There's a huge amount of information there. And it keeps flowing all the time. It never stops. So what the point is, though, that we want to find really strange and unusual events. Well, because anything that's unusual might also be unexpected and therefore bad. Now, I'm going to make a distinction, and it's different than the distinction most people make, but it's the one I'll use here because it's convenient, between two things, outliers and anomalies. Outliers are things that happen that are a data point, but in the expected distribution. Like a friend who has a hedgehog as a pet. That's my friend's hedgehog pet. It's unusual, certainly, but it's not insane. But if your friend says, "Oh, I've got a pet, it's a gray alien," well, that something else is going on if that's the case. And so you want to distinguish between the two. But really, the only good way to distinguish between the two is to actually find the outliers and then see if they're anomalies or not. And that really requires a human input. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Splanky has a Twitter account, but you can ask about it at the end if you're curious. Now, there are a lot of third-party tools to do outlier and anomaly detection, and I'm not going to be talking about any of them today. Not that they're not good, but the point is that, like the Frenchman once said, if you want to do something right, do it yourself. And that's what we want to do. We want to find out whether we can do it, and if so, let's do it. It allows us to more control over the whole process, among other things. And if it's important, I mean, if it's not really a major part of your job to figure out if there's an anomaly on your network, then go right ahead, let someone else do the hard work. But if it's a big part of your job, then you probably want to have more control over it and bring it in-house. And this is just the starting point for doing that. So, and I'll be using Python. First is that I have the source code. It's easy to write and to read. It also has a lot of mature third-party libraries that are open source, especially for data science, and that are very good for this. It's easy to install if you haven't installed it already. And given that a lot of the libraries that we'll be using are written in C or Python, or Fortran or something, they're actually together, it's fast enough. We'll be talking about that a little while later too. I gotta check the time. Okay. So that's what we're going to do here. We're going to write a few interesting example tools to detect outlier events in Python. And they're basically intended to answer a couple of interesting questions that I started with and to scale well. Because if they don't scale well, they're going to die eventually given the onslaught of data. And I also wanted them to be fairly easy to modify and certainly improve in order to answer your questions, whatever they might be for where you are and what you're doing. And the code, you can see the code. That's the link to the code, the GitHub repo. I'll actually repeat it on the slide at the end of the talk, so you don't need to scribble it down right now, unless you want to. So the main issue here is to discover bad things before they become big problems. Now, that requires keeping track of net flows over the entire network across time. And you need to do that well enough to be able to find the unusual things you want to find, but there's a lot of information. And you also want to make it tunable. So this is like, you see some of the impossible drawings up here of stolen from the internet. This seems paradoxical. But we have some things on our side. And the first one, tunable. The very title of this talk, and I'm assuming everyone here has actually encountered Gaussian distributions before. If anyone hasn't, has anyone not? Okay, great. Typical Gaussian distribution, and the very title of this talk refers to the fact that 5 standard deviations away from the norm is a 1 in a million event. And that's the sort of, if you're not extremely paranoid, that's the sort of event you want to know about when it happens. Now, 1 in a thousand is about a little over 3 standard deviations away from the norm. And in fact, on the drawing up here, you can actually, they actually label the 1 in a thousand. They don't label 1 in a million. So we'll be assuming the data is normally distributed. We'll have cause later to come back to this assumption and see if it's right or not. But right now, we'll assume things are Gaussian. Now, the basic overview of what we're doing is, of what I did, what the code does, is it creates a feed of net flows. And they're based on real net flows, except they've had things scratched out and replaced, so that they're anonymized. And the format essentially, it's this it's a stream of tuples of timestamp, source IP, source port, destination IP, destination port, and flow count. Now, for this talk, I'll be dropping flow count. Now, if you want to, for questions, we can talk about, you can ask the question, we can talk about what to do with flow counts if you wanted to. Now, what I then will do is create a consumer for those net flows. The consumer will have the tools inside of it, and each tool will be able to say, parameterized by the number of standard deviations it pays attention to, 1 in a thousand, 1 in a million, whatever your level of paranoia is, and how often it checks for events. Now, some things develop more slowly than others, so some things you may want to check every day, and some things you may want to check every few minutes. You can do both. Oh, sorry, skip that. Now, I have 4 tools that I wrote for this. And what you're interested in may vary from this, but this is what I was interested in. The first one is they're all in the form of questions. The first question is, do I have an IP address that keeps, over time, increasing the number of ports it's scanning? Because at a certain point, you want to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, that's weird. It's scanning all my ports. The second question do I have an IP address that all of a sudden has gotten a lot busier than it's ever been in the past? The third question is there an IP address that has suddenly gotten a lot busier than any other IP address? And the fourth question is based on a puzzle that was proposed to me a little while ago. The idea is that for most hosts, they have a certain number of applications. They do a limited range of things. And after a while, you've seen all the possibilities. So at a certain point, most servers should stop sending communications to new IP address port combinations. And if there's one that doesn't do that doesn't sort of stop, freeze or stop doing interesting things, let's find out about it. Now, to do all 4 of these things, I'll use the same small set of tools. Now, there's a lot of data to keep track of, so I'll be using sketching and streaming tools. And they have the advantage that they don't increase their memory footprint over time. In other words, once you allocate them for each IP address, or once you allocate them, they never grow after that. And they keep giving you the right answers, or their answers anyway. So three things we'll be tracking for these four tools. The first one is set cardinality, or the number of unique things that have passed by. And that's, we're modeling that. We use a data structure called hyperloglog. Now, has anyone heard about hyperloglog? Okay, so a couple of you. That's good. It's a cool thing. Basically, the idea is that it keeps track of the number of unique items, the cardinality of the set that's passing through it, the multiset that's passing through it. And it does so with a memory footprint that's, you know, maybe a few K in size. So you can actually create a lot of them, one for each IP address on your network, and you can keep track of up to trillions of things for each one, even though it has a very small footprint. And the other two tools are for incremental Gaussian statistics, means and standard deviations, performing incrementally. So we only keep track of the current mean and standard deviation, not all the data. And online linear regression, basically to find slopes. Both of these don't keep track of all the any of the data. They just have a certain statistic they keep track of, and that's all you need. And the collective, what happens is that this serves to turn big data into small data. And so we can do this. All these tools can be done on a single, not only single CPU, a single thread on a single CPU, and get very good throughput. Now, since I like these, there's a number of other examples of similar sketching data structures. Bloom filters, a lot of you might have heard of Bloom filters now, for set membership. Count min sketches, if you want to count a large population of items, how many times each one occurs. Min hash does set intersections. Locality sensitive hashing allows you to find nearest neighbors in a high dimensional space. And the T digest is for calculating the quantile distribution of data. Now, it makes no assumption about the distribution of the data, just where the quantiles are. And it does so efficiently. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. And now, before we go on, I'm going to go over to the demo and just kick it off. It takes about 2 minutes, so I want it to be ready by the time we get back, before we get back to it. The four tools. The first one is the IP port scan detector. And essentially all it is a hyperloglog for each IP, for each source IP address. And so every period you give it, say every 5 minutes, or every hour, or every day, it'll look at each address's hyperloglog and see what the total number of destination IP address, IP ports it's sent communications to, it's sent NetFlow to. And it collects those statistics and takes a snapshot at that time period, and then looks to see looks at that distribution over all your servers and finds if any of them are more than n, five sigmas, above the mean. So, check time again. Thank you. That's pretty straightforward. The growth detector. You know, is there an address that's suddenly gotten a lot busier? Now, what we're doing here is we're taking a hyperloglog for the short term. It counts how many unique destinations for each IP address there were in each time period. And then it keeps, for each IP address, just does Gaussian statistics over those destinations for each period. And that will tell us all of a sudden, if a machine has gotten a lot busier all of a sudden, it reports it. Similarly, for the explosion detector, what it does is it finds out if an IP address has suddenly gotten a lot busier than any other IP address during that time period. And that basically just keeps short-term HLLs for each time period, for each IP address, and then creates the Gaussian statistics over those IP addresses for each, over the counts for each IP address, and then reports if any are above the number of sigmas you're interested in for that time, at that time period. Now, the last one is host stabilization, which is the question of whether a host has finally gotten into a rut, and can we predict when that's supposed to happen. Now, what I'm assuming here is that there's an exponential, a modeling with an exponential decay. In other words, at each time period, we keep track of how many new destinations it's seen. And that should decrease over time. But the problem is that all we've seen is the past. How do we predict the future? How do we get an estimate for the total number we should see over all time? And then know how, when we get close to that, that we've seen all that we're going to see, probably. Now, can we do that? It turns out that, a little bit of calculus later, we can. And that you see the equation at the bottom. Basically, the slope, as you can see from the lines in the drawing, the slopes are negative. So, but as, basically, it's the slope at a given point, at the final data point, times the average over all the data points, the slope over all the data points. And minus is in there because essentially the slopes are negative. And that predicts, that gives you the most likely prediction for the total number of remaining points to be seen. Now, and so just a check to see if this makes sense. As you can see from the drawing, the slope should get closer and closer to zero. And the average, as you get more and more small numbers, should get closer and closer to zero as well. So it actually makes a certain, it passes the plausibility test. And so all we do that is we put that into code. We have the hyperlog, and then we also keep track of the last measurement of hyperlog, as we know what the increment is. And we just have the Gaussian statistics for each IP address, and a linear regression for each IP address, incremental linear regression. We just keep track of all of those. And if a server becomes frozen, it wasn't frozen before, you report it. And if a server was frozen before and becomes unfrozen, we report that too. Now let's go back to the demo and see how we're doing. Okay. So we did 10 million takes about 2 minutes. You see the number there. So we get about 5 million net flows a minute on this. And so you can see this is using the print command to log things, which is the stupidest logging in the world. And you can certainly do it better. And so you have some, at the beginning you have some noise because things are noisy at the beginning when you don't have a lot of statistics. But then it logs everything that happens, and at the end you see that we did 10 million in 2 minutes and 13 seconds. Now, here's the overview of things, which is that at the end, after 10 million, we had one thing that looked like it was doing port scanning, and two overall time that we'd seen, but one had dropped out. Nothing that was doing current growth above its long-term behavior, but seven that had been pegged for it earlier. One that was currently exploding at the end, and that was the one we'd ever found. And then, this was what surprised me when I first ran this, there were a lot of hosts that had become unfrozen, that had been frozen in the past and become unfrozen. And about half of them in this data set. And I thought, isn't that odd? I wouldn't think that would happen. Then I realized where I'd gotten the data from, that underlyingly, before I obfuscated it, the data was actually had a certain number of desktops in it, which, again, you wouldn't expect to behave like servers, because people keep doing things with them. So I said, okay, that actually makes a certain amount of sense. So let's go back over here and see how we're doing. Okay, great. And there. Now, the question is, I'll get back to this question before, is the data actually Gaussian? Now, it turns out that if you just looked at the results I just showed you, you'd say, I was setting most of the things at 1 in a million. And I was getting a lot more than 1 in a million. So is the data actually Gaussian? Now let's go back to this, because I actually, I actually plotted the, hold on, maybe it's a little smaller so you can actually see the whole thing. So this is the port scanner cardinalities after 10 million. And you can see there's a rather long tail there. It doesn't look really that Gaussian. And the same is true for the other statistics that we expected to be Gaussian. That long tail, but not too bad, I suppose. But so what I wanted to do was to actually ask the question, well, is there a fit that would actually be better than this? And to do that, well, I actually, there's that blog link right there is a great blog if you're interested in this kind of thing. And so basically I stole some code from him and created something that tried three distributions for the quality of fit. One was the Gaussian distribution. One was a Poisson distribution, which essentially is for discrete numbers. And the third was is a power law distribution. And so I created that, and I used something called the Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic, which is essentially a kind of a code way to look at to eyeball two graphs and see where the place of maximum separation is and report that. So I did that, and then you can see the report. Now, for the port scanner, it did the normal distribution fit, and the KS test result wasn't good. It's the idea is it's supposed to be if the statistic is small and the p-value is high, this would be a good fit. Now, this is not small, and the p-value is not high. So it's not obviously not a great fit for Gaussian distribution, but it's even worse for Poisson and for power law distributions. The fit is even worse. So, and the same is true for all the other distributions. We don't have anything that fits well, at least of the three we tried out. So, what do we do? There are a lot of other distributions I could try. That can get complicated fast. But it looks like Gaussian is the best of the three we checked. So we'll go with that for the time being. It does imply that your one in a million distribution will probably happen more often than you think. But we can deal with that too. On the other hand, we can also use the t-digest I mentioned earlier. If we need to try to find use a non-parametric distribution, and then look for, okay, what's the one in a million within this data based on that, we could try to use that. It's a little more complicated than that, and it's kind of beyond the scope of this, so I'll stop there. And then conclusions. I think I've gone faster than I thought I would. Yes. Anyway, the point is that, and you can, as you look at the code, you can download it. This can all be done without very much agonizing pain. We leveraged a lot of Python data science tools. We used some interesting sketching and streaming data structures. Now, one of the things I said this as a joke a while ago. Alexander Pope once said, "A little learning is a dangerous thing." It turns out a little statistics is even better. And on the one hand, we did a lot of stuff. We got some interesting results based on knowing very little about statistics. We also gotten hot water we might have to do more research about because we didn't actually go very deep into the actual statistics of it. So that's another thing to do in the future. And when you look at this code, you'll discover that there's a lot of room for improvement, obviously. But that's what I want. If you decide, look at my code and decide, wow, this guy's code sucks, I'll do this myself, well, then I've won, because that's all I really wanted you to do. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to my talk, and that's it. Thank you. And if you have any questions, come on up. I seated you with a few questions if you're curious.
Well, if nobody has it, oh, good, we have a question. Get up there, get up there.
Two questions. The first one, was that first IP port scanning in the end? Did you go back and investigate?
Actually, for that one, I didn't. This was a network with about 100 machines on it, some of which were Windows desktops, and some of which were servers. And so I did spot check, because the anonymization made it a little iffy to actually undo. But I did manage to spot check a few things, and a plausibility argument that, for the last statistic, most of the machines that had become unfrozen were Windows desktops. But I didn't check any of the others.
Okay.
I probably should have. No. But thank you.
The other question was, have you considered kind of plugging that into a monitoring system for more kind of online, up to the minutes, up to the hour?
I didn't, mostly because it's relatively straightforward to plug into a monitoring system, and there are a lot of them. And it was kind of, it's obviously a thing you'd want to do. If you were take my code and upgrade or write your own, you'd want to have a system that read these logging comments and alerted you in a more, relaxing way. But yes, that's a good idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. I'm wondering whether this can be integrated into any monitoring for the network traffic or load balancer traffic on it?
I'm sorry. Could you speak a little louder? Because
sure. Okay. So can this be integrated into monitoring software for checking the traffic or the load balancer traffic and all?
Let me use my microphone. Load balancers are an interesting problem because often they sit in the middle and if you aren't careful, they can obfuscate who's really talking to whom. To answer your question, yes. How much you'd want to be able to undo the load, kind of make the load balancers transparent and doing some other trick, and then using that for monitoring, that would be another issue. But yes.
Okay.
That would be good.
Thank you.
Anybody else? All right.
Thank you, John.